celebrating 100 years of history of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota in sound. Part 2.
As president, Joyce organized a Midwest Blind Teachers Seminar and a regional rehabilitation conference.
For a little historical background on rehabilitation services to blind persons, we go back probably to the beginning of vocational rehab law, that is to 1920, when the first law was passed in this country, the Smith-Fess Act. In the Rehab Act of 1920, there were no services designated for blind persons. We've come from that point to today, where we do have in the law recognition of special services for blind. Of course, that has come about as a result largely of the work of the blind themselves.
A lot of people are taught that you can do things to the extent that you can see, and sort of the philosophy that in the world of the blind, the one-eyed man is king.
You do have to help people to the point where they believe in themselves and they believe in other blind people.
It's my pleasure as president of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota to welcome you to this Midwest Conference of Blind Teachers.
Your president today hit upon the one thing that's going to solve your problem, educating the public.
Periodically, there have been moves to combine state services for the blind with the General Rehabilitation Agency. Eric Smith explains why we need to oppose this.
If you're going to put all kinds of things that sound alike together, why not, you know, take the supervisor of highways and the supervisor of rehabilitation, the supervisor of education, and put them all together and make a department of supervisors?
Keeping ourselves informed has always been important, as shown here by Mary Hartle, explaining the newly passed sections 503 and 504 of the Rehabilitation Act.
What it is 503 requires that contractors, a federal contractor, take affirmative action. So they have to take positive steps to go out and recruit handicapped persons into their employment. 504 says that you cannot discriminate, and it only applies to recipients of federal financial assistance.
Events surrounding the Minneapolis Society for the Blind and NAC continued to escalate. One of our members, Lawrence Kettner, was certified to be paid less than the minimum wage through the manipulation of his evaluation, as Joyce Hoffa outlines at the 1974 National Convention.
I want to let you hear now something that even though we've been in the NAC battle a long time, and even though you've seen lots of bad situations in sheltered shops and other NAC-accredited agencies, I believe you'll find to be shocking. I want to put Joyce Hoffa on to tell you this story, and then we'll see what you think, and also what our federal officials who are with us think.
It is not surprising that the Minneapolis Society for the Blind is accredited by NAC. As a matter of fact, the Society's disgraceful behavior in the Kettner case merely bears out the Federation's contention that the agency's NAC accredits are among the worst of the lot. The Kettner travesty did occur. The documentation does exist. The Minneapolis Society is accredited. The Society did knowingly and intentionally play fast and loose with minimum wage provisions of the Fair Labor Standards Act. Mr. Kettner reports three additional facts which should be noted. One, the standard output per hour is based on the output of sighted factory workers operating machinery in good working order. The Society's equipment is broken. Mr. Kettner was required to perform the punching operation by hand. Two, during the time study period, Mr. Kettner frequently ran out of materials. He often sat for nearly an hour waiting for materials. This waiting time was included in determining his piece rate. Three, during the time study period, Mr. Kettner was subjected to the harassment of sighted employees and supervisors standing behind him saying, "Faster, faster." On the day of the actual signing, He was badgered in the main office from before 9 o'clock a.m. until noon. He finally signed because he was told he would sign or be fired. Minneapolis society officials were unaware on February 11th while they were insisting that they could document and therefore that Mr. Kettner must admit that he could only do substandard work, that he had, on February 8th, been hired by Sterner Lighting Company at $2.17 per hour.
Dr. Jernigan returned to Minnesota in 1975, and here is a sampling of convention rates at the time.
The registration fee is 50 cents. I believe there will be a drawing for a door prize. You're eligible for that door prize if you have registered. The banquet charge is $5. The third item in registration is the membership payment of $1 for your year's membership. And so all of that comes to $6.50.
We're getting ours, as you know, this time for $8.50, and our doubles and twins still for $12. I doubt that those rates will come our way again. Next year in Los Angeles, singles are $15 and doubles and twins are $16.
In 1974, Tom Scanlon was elected to the position of state treasurer, a position he held for 40 years. At the 1975 convention, he gave his first financial report as treasurer.
Now, this may not be the most interesting part of the convention, but I think to a certain degree it's pretty critical, because without it, none of the other things we're doing would be possible. We wouldn't be able to make what progress we've made. So just bear with us. These are the audited financial statements for the year ending March 31st, 1975, and there's also a comparison to 1974.
A major presentation at the 1975 convention was given by our attorney, Jerry Troon, regarding the breakdown in negotiations with the Minneapolis Society for the Blind.
We entered into some settlement negotiations with the society, but they proved very fruitless. The society is not willing to bend very much. They would give a few more blind spots on the board. They would not open up the society to some fresh air. They insist on maintaining their, what I guess is a kind of incestuous relationship with themselves, in that they won't permit anybody from the outside to become a member of their board. Everything has to come from within, and if you're not on the board, you can't be anything. And with that kind of an approach, you can never get any participation from outside, and you can never get anybody in there who doesn't think like the people who are already there. Needless to say, we have cut off the settlement negotiations, and it looks as though it's not going to be settled, but rather that it's going to be tried. We're looking forward to that.
At the same time, there were continued difficulties surrounding the Home for the Blind. The vacancy rate increased, and residents tended to be older. To learn more about services available, we had a speaker and developed a partnership with the Minneapolis Age and Opportunity Center. Jim Schleppegrell, a former state president and the leading proponent of establishing a student division back in 1971, asked a question about the delivery of meals to seniors.
You talked about the meals on wheels. Let us say that a person is perfectly able to prepare their own meals, but you cannot buy the groceries. Are services available for somebody like that?
Right. We will do. Provide transportation, for example, to someone needing to go out grocery shopping, including carrying the groceries back and forth to the house.
A long-range planning committee chaired by Roger Drewicki was established to look at some of our long-term funding and also what direction needed to be taken regarding the Home for the Blind.
Thank you to the Women's Guild for all of their work during the past year. Let's have a hand for the Women's Guild. Roger, let's have a report from the Long Rangers.
The Long Range Planning Committee has considered several issues. We've discussed the home in the last year to a certain extent, but didn't come up with any concrete recommendations because of the issues involved. The areas that we've discussed most intensively have been the the resolution to reorganize the two affiliates of Minnesota. Of course, we introduced that last year, and the UB has failed to act upon our resolution, so that's where that issue stands. We've devoted most of our attention to a consideration of the bylaws.
The issue of having two NFB affiliates from Minnesota of our national organization received a lot of attention in 1977. External forces tended to play one affiliate against the other. We passed a resolution asking that our national office work toward one affiliate. Jim Brennan, a very active member at the time, expressed his relief that perhaps this might finally be resolved. Later that year, after significant attempts to resolve the two-affiliate issue, including discussion of merging the United Blind and the NFB of Minnesota, the United Blind voted to withdraw from the Federation, leaving one Minnesota affiliate.
Resolution A7702. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the NFB recognize the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota as the sole Federation affiliate in the state.
So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Am I coming through? All I want to say is I'm glad to see that this game playing is over.
After a court decision in our favor regarding the suspension of membership of the Minneapolis Society for the Blind, the decision was appealed and then upheld in our favor. This set the stage for a divisive and at times nasty election involving a proxy fight. Here is an example of a widely heard radio commercial. This is followed by portions of an in-depth report on Minnesota Public Radio.
On October 15th, the world's record was broken by 1,800 dancers who tapped their way down Hennepin Avenue. But after November 14th, we may be hearing a different kind of tapping. Because that's the day a special election will decide whether the National Federation of the Blind will take over the Minneapolis Society for the Blind. And if that happens, we'll lose our United Way funding. Our services for the blind and handicapped will be canceled. And the people who need help the most will be put out on the street. You see, the National Federation excludes anyone who has handicaps in addition to blindness. And that's nearly 90% of the people we help. You can help right now. Check this week's Minneapolis Star and Tribune or St. Paul Dispatch and Pioneer Press for your membership coupon. Return it with $1 and we'll send you your voting proxy, as well as information about the National Federation of the Blind's position in their proxy. The Minneapolis Society for the Blind. Give now, and we won't have to tap you again.
Ray Kemp is vice president of the society, and he is a member of the board of directors. Kemp has been blind for 15 years.
Blindness is a severe handicap. And anybody who says it is an inconvenience or is not a handicap is, I don't know where they come from.
Joyce Scanlon was an English teacher before she became president of the Minnesota chapter of the National Federation of the Blind 7 years ago. Blindness, she says, is not a handicap, it's an inconvenience.
At the society, we are taught to emphasize the limitations. These are things you cannot do. These are people we cannot help. It's always in the negative. I had a master's degree in English and had been teaching for 5 years. The counselor said to me, well, if you're good with your hands, maybe they'll give you a job in the sheltered shop. You see, now that statement contains a wealth of philosophy and an attitude toward blindness. She reinforced everything that I felt about myself at that time. You see, if people can accept the attitude that blind people, are really people who want independence, who can be independent, that will affect the program that they run.
The name Kenneth Jernigan has become an issue because Jernigan is the president of the National Federation of the Blind, which is based in Maryland.
The manager of the Minneapolis Society for the Blind, its director, has been going around the country trying to scour up proxy votes left and right. I don't object to that, but somehow when they talk about the Federation, they talk of it as if it's an out-of-state organization trying to control something, when in reality, it's the other way around. The blind of Minnesota are trying to get a voice in that society, which affects their lives.
One of the groups he is referring to is the National Accreditation Council for agencies serving the blind and visually handicapped based in New York City. Richard Bleeker says the society's board of directors election is important.
should the National Federation of the Blind become a decided influence in the affairs of the Minneapolis Society based upon policy and ideological positions maintained by National Federation of the Blind, I believe we would have good reason for concern. There are some incontrovertible facts that would suggest that NFB's track record leaves a lot to be desired.
Finally, in November of 1979, an election was held, and results gave us 8 positions on a 30-person board, as can be heard here.
The following people have been elected now to the board of directors. Thomas M. Scanlon. Vincent Abrams. I ask you if you would hold your applause. All of the candidates have been called. Vincent Abramson. Mary Hartle. Dr. Frederick Arney, Curtis L.D. Chong, Warren Barkley, Janet Lee, Nadine Jacobson, Dr. James Craig, Dr. Roger Druitt, Marie Whitaker, Dr. John Dempsey, Carol Del Favero, Milo Gillian.
Unfortunately, this was barely less than 1/3 of the board, so the membership was again closed, legally this time.
The motion carried, 24,141 in favor of the motion, 12,920 against the motion. Since that concludes the business that was identified for this meeting, I'm going to turn it back to the president.
While we achieved a major victory, having less than 1/3 of the positions along with the closing of the society's membership, meant we had no ongoing way to be represented. Therefore, when the National Convention came to Minneapolis in the summer of 1980, a march of some 2,000 people from our convention hotel at the Leamington Hotel downtown to the Minneapolis Society for the Blind was held.
The court decides, after long years, that the society behaved illegally in trying to exclude blind people, that it behaved illegally in saying that it had changed its bylaws and just inadvertently had forgot to register with the Secretary of State that it had changed them and all this other stuff. And then once the court said that we had a right to an election, the society goes out and does what most people would regard as buying the election. That is, it spent, by its own admission, $149,000, and beyond that, God knows how much its partners throughout the country in the management structure of the sheltered workshops and the other agencies spent to try to buy the election and get it for them. Of course, we didn't have the kind of money they had, and they had access to lots of the levers of power. Nevertheless, we made our campaign. The court ordered the election. We got 8 people on the board. You've heard them say this morning they're excluded from most information. They aren't even allowed to know the compensation that their own executive director gets. And yet we are told that we are the ones who are destructive. We're a militant outfit. They took our proxy votes and decided which ones they would accept and which ones they wouldn't, and wouldn't even let us see the votes they claimed they had. What kind of fairness is that? The court ordered them to let us see the votes. They wouldn't do it. We're going and ask the court to cite them for contempt. I'm going to call the roll of the states, and we need to form our line of march and battle. The first state to lead the van, Alabama.
Neck, neck, get off our back.
Neck, neck, get off our back.
Look, maybe we could give them a song like I've been working in the workshop all the live long day, and with the wages that they pay me, it's just to pass my time away. Joyce Scanlon, who is president of the NFB of Minnesota Society. Joyce.
Hello, Minneapolis Society for the Blind. The blind of the nation have come here in mass today to speak to you, to tell you that we are fed up with your your paternalism, your custodialism, and we are here to tell you and the public that we will no longer put up with it.
You have said we don't have numbers. Well, here they are. Can you assemble several thousand people? We have come to the outer walls of the Minneapolis Society for the Blind. We have come from our farms, our businesses, our workshops, and our agencies. We have come so that we might demonstrate our determination to be free. We have battled the broom shops, mastered the mattress shops, and rejected the sweatshops. Through our sacrifices, our turmoil, and our scars, we have climbed close to the final plateau on the stairway to freedom. We've tried to talk to you. You wouldn't talk to us. We have tried to reason with you. You wouldn't reason with us. We're now here today to tell you in as forceful of terms as we can, we do know who we are, and we will never go back. Here's something you'd be interested in. Gwendolyn Williams, says Steve Benson, is truly a frontline soldier at 90 years of age. She marched the whole 3.2 miles.
Minneapolis Tribune, July 3, 1980. On the front page, there is a large picture in the center of our demonstration yesterday, taken, I believe, from the roof of the Society building. The caption reads, 2000 Pickett Society for Blind.